disappointed. Thanks for pointing that out. The subtle little ways you had of putting me down felt like nails down a chalkboard. I'm trying to figure out what's so special about your life that I have to get out. Of the life you saw. Hey, I like me. I got friends that like me too. Things that make me happy are the things I do. Why is it the life I live I can no longer share with you? When so much of me withers if you don't help it grow. Oh no. From the dust you reap the embers of the life you sow. When you were around, you weren't really there. You have run your last dead game. You're out of my air, even though I kinda lied. Yeah, even though I kinda lied. Having you there. What you plant just withers if you don't help it grow. Oh no. From the dust you reap the embers of the life you sow.
You're listening to KHENLPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado, and that was Bones and Friends on their newly released Nomad album, and that happened to be one that my son carries on, and it looks like there's a lot of town folks that musicians playing on this album, so it ought to be a great release party they have this Friday. And being Truth Quest, we are streamed on the internet at khen.org, and if you'd like to listen to tonight's program or any past programs of Truth Quest with Melody, they're available at www.gimmesometruth.info or linked from the khen.org website. And my special guest tonight is Don Nikoloff. And we had him back last year, and he is back, and he's at his best doing his journalism, that's research into avenues that, well, you just have to stay tuned and listen, because he really does dig in and start finding out some things that make people think and start looking in a little bit more on who we hire and who we bring into our lives. And Don Nikoloff is a professional multi-instrumental musician, singer, composer, conductor, arranger, orchestrator, and teacher, producer, audio recording engineer, investigative journalist, and boy, I printed it out from his website and I can't read it because it's a dark background. So, but I'll let you go ahead and talk, Don. Or you fill us in a little bit more of anything I may have missed. Or did you hear me?
hi, Melody. How are you?
Hi, Don.
I'm getting a little bit of distortion on my feed from you.
Is that better?
It sounds like mic attenuation. It's hard to say, but, I just want to let you know.
How's that?
Sounds a little better. Okay.
All right.
Don't mean to criticize. Just want to be able to hear you clearly.
No, I much prefer to get it out of the way and straighten out in the beginning as it's doing, you know, because I like to put these up on the net. And if we can't, you get all that distortion there, then it's
Yeah,
no
it's very
fun
good
knowing.
Right now. You did doing a great job.
Okay.
I guess you left out jack of all trades, master of none. how did I come? I guess the big question is, how did I come to be a researcher? And I believe that God inspired me to see the truth in many ways. I've been sort of an intuitive from childhood, and I had to suppress it in my childhood. And as I got older, I came to grips with it, and I became a researcher. Way back in 1975, I was literally doing research on the things that I'm talking about today. And it was always like, is it okay for me to bring this out now? And no, it's not the time yet. Is it okay now? And every year I would go through this process several times a year. And finally, about 3 years ago, let's say in it's more early 2006, I should say, I was inspired to call into a few radio shows and share some of this research. Before long, I was invited on some shows as a guest, and I was preparing my first article for the Idaho Observer, whom I still write for.
And by the way, before you get too far, how is Don doing?
Well, he's not doing very well. Thank you for asking. If I can ask your listeners to do anything, if you know the power of prayer, then by all means, say a prayer for the speedy recovery of Don Harkins. He's on life support right now. It's not looking very good, but I trust that miracles can occur, and I experience them every day of my life.
So. And he's the editor along with his wife, Ingrid?
Correct? Yes, they're publishers and editors of the Idaho Observer. That's correct.
Okay, go ahead now.
So I started writing for the Observer, and I did this piece on what's now known as Wantagate, the international theft of trillions of dollars. Everybody said I was nuts. I was a nutcase. I'd just fallen off the turnip truck, so to speak. And I didn't really let that bother me. I remained steadfast. Now it's an everyday term, an everyday amount of money thrown out there, trillion. And I predicted last year that we would soon be talking about quadrillions. Much of what I've written has been proven to be true. Of course, there was some disinformation out there because Leo Wanta has turned out to be working alongside the the evil cadres of the CIA and some other international intelligence agencies. And, you know, he's got his own interests at heart, and he has led some people on a wild goose chase. There was a time that he was leading me down that road, and when I got some evidence showing me what was happening, I tried sharing that with Christopher Story in England, who has written about this in great detail in his International Currency Review and in some other publications he's done, such as The New Underworld Order, which is a fabulous book which documents Wanta's involvement in this international espionage banking scandal that raised these duplicitous trillions of dollars that they've been playing in the hedge fund derivative markets ever since. And this is in violation to all the international banking laws, certainly our laws here. These people are committing treason, those who are actually Americans. But I wanted to get to the bottom of this and really find out, who is this? These people wouldn't do this to America if they were Americans. So I did the genealogy in April, May, and June of 2007 on the Bush clan and discovered that their name was really Scherf. And that's all been proven to be accurate, by the way, straight out of W's mouth.
Wow.
And my name has been on the lips of many of these politicians in normal conversations with mutual friends that we have. I find it rather humorous that my research would come up on the lips of a president of the United States.
Well, yeah, but a lot of them aren't bringing out the information that you
are. No, the media is propagandized, bought, sold, and paid for to the hilt, and they're owned basically by the pharmaceutical companies. All you have to do is look at advertising. Who advertises on television? It's primarily the pharmaceutical companies, one drug after another. And so to make a long story short, I did that genealogy. And I wrote a few small pieces, a teaser piece, and I came up with the concept of the Three Stooges go to Washington. And I was specifically writing about John McCain, Barack Obama, and Hillary Clinton. I'm working on the Hillary piece now. All the research is done. And I'm exposing what I have found through my genealogical research, my document research, my photographic analysis, that all of these people came from foreign countries. We were sold a bill of goods, and a fairy tale as far as their backgrounds and who their bloodlines really are. They're related to, all of them are related to the most corrupt people on the planet, the most devious, the most evil people on the planet. And we can tell by their own histories. We don't have to dig very deep to see that all of these people are involved in massive corruption. And so I did the McCain genealogy, and I got a call from Don Harkins, my editor and publisher at The Observer. And he had asked me, would you be willing to do a genealogical piece on these three presidential candidates? I had already completed the work on McCain, and I told him, I'm doing it on those three. It was so synchronistic. It was almost unbelievable. And yet, I wrote the first two parts of The Three Stooges Go to Washington actually dealt with exposing the bogus John McCain lineage. And out of two issues of the paper, two subsequent issues or successive issues of the Idaho Observer, I had major spreads within the paper. They were averaging around six pages per article. And, you know, you're looking at articles anywhere from 18 to 20,000 words. That's a big portion of a novel. And, I had gone down the rabbit hole, as we say, and, made the connection to King Edward VII, who at the time would have been Prince Albert Edward. And these were children out of wedlock. John Sidney McCain Sr., the grandfather, John Sidney, McCain Jr., the father, and then John Sidney McCain III. Now, their name was McCann, and they were traveling on ships. They were merchant marines, you could say. They worked on ships as oilers and stokers, and at least that's what the dossier said. But I could actually find the point in time where they inserted them illegally into the U.S. Navy. These people didn't go to the U.S. Naval Academy. They're nowhere listed on the Academy's website in their rosters, in their lists of notable achievers, such as some of the generals or admirals, I should say admirals that they produced. And one such admiral is in a picture with John Sidney McCain Sr. In 1960, and I could swear I was looking at an 80-year-old man. Now they said, and this was Admiral Halsey, by the way. Admiral Halsey was about the same age as John Sidney McCain Sr. Why didn't he look like he aged 20 years from being out at sea? Why was it just this McCain? Well, I had deduced that he was not born in 1884, but likely in 1865, and that put him directly in the lineage, time-wise and people-wise, as far as the affairs that Prince Albert Edward was having. He was having an affair with one Jenny Jerome, who later became Lady Randolph Churchill. Now, what's interesting is in my prior research on the Bush clan, I did a section on Circuit Chautauqua. Wouldn't you know that recently, within the past 2 months, I was researching that database, and I found names like John Foster Dulles in that traveling social socialization or indoctrination event that traveled the United States. And I also found Randolph Churchill in the list. So this was planned. This was all planned to take place sometime between World War I and World War II. These people were going to be infused into the system. If you discard everything that I debunk about John McCain's background and his so-called Mississippian genealogy, you will find that one element in and of itself completely dispels and debunks the story about McCain being born at the Coco Solo Naval Hospital in Coco Solo, Panama. And that one fact was Executive Order 8981, which was issued on December 17th, 1941. 10 days after Pearl Harbor, the engineers were instructed to follow up on a May 1941 survey of the land to determine the boundaries to build a naval hospital. McCain was supposedly born August 29th, 1936. And I know I'm racing with the facts, but try to follow me here. a lot of facts to bring out.
Oh, boy.
So if he was born in 1936, why was Roosevelt, Franklin D. Roosevelt, issuing an executive order, again, 8981, to the engineers to map out the boundaries and acquire the land by any means, either through purchase or through lease, to build the boundary to the hospital? The hospital wasn't built until some 7 years after McCain was born in the hospital. It's impossible. So it has to be a ruse, you see.
Okay, now, before I go any further, I want to say the views expressed on this program are those of myself and are my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And I also
but are likely to do so. Let me just add that. I'm being a sort of a ham here, but I apologize for that if I offended anyone on your staff.
And I also wanted to say thanks to Emily, you know, for all the, you know, her fine program beforehand, and just to kind of put it out there that we've got a great radio station here, and if anybody wants to get involved in our membership drive coming up and, you know, underwriting, just let us know at 539-1069, and let's go back to this where you're get going, and I promise I won't interrupt anymore.
Well, as I said, you know, we have these stories which sound very much like the Bush family stories and the Walker clan, which was my previous research back in 2007. And then the research I began on McCain in 2008 and Obama and Hillary Clinton seemed to follow the same pattern. So I already had a mode of research. And in fact, Don Harkins tells me that this is a totally new research model from any journalist he's ever dealt with or anyone he studied. It's based on intuition first, and then I go out and I find the facts to back up what my intuition is telling me. Because my intuition is based on my ability to perceive the truth. I may not perceive it in its entirety, but certainly you know what a gut feeling is. We all get those from time to time. And when you follow the hunch and the initial impression, usually that's the most accurate. Not always, but most of the time it is. And I began to trust my intuition as a young man. So as I got older and I could apply that to music and, you know, not to use a pun, but I connect the dots with music, with orchestration and arranging and composing. And as a conductor, you have to be able to do that. You have to be able to grasp large concepts. That's a unique feature that many conductors have. I'm not the only one. Many multi-instrumentalists have that same ability to grasp larger-than-life concepts and bring them into reality. And people appreciate that because it makes for good music or makes for good art or, you know, good literature.
It's kind of like thinking outside the box, I guess.
Well, yeah, you really have to be able to expand yourself, and the box isn't big enough to keep you contained in it that way when you're operating on that level. So, you know, I would listen to what Don would say about my research, and I said, well, it's interesting that you should say that because you're really describing, I feel, a unique way of doing this research. Any investigator is going to rely on their hunches, and that's really another word for our intuition. It's an intuitive impression, or some call it discernment. In religion, they like to refer to it as discernment, but you know, a discerning or an intuitive individual is basically looking at what is not apparent to most people. He's not just using the mind, but he's using the sixth sense, which really is, it goes, you know, throughout the universe. You can expand your possibilities to eternity. There's no limits, you see. So I may not find what I'm looking for right away, but once I find a piece of the puzzle and it starts to take shape, it's just secondhand, really. It becomes an afterthought to continue with that research. It's not very difficult.
I find that in my own research, I find I go through the same thing. It's amazing how much your inner voice can direct you and where to look for information and look down different rabbit holes. And I totally agree with where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm just trying to give your listening audience the perspective of what drives a person to do this. You know, I am a spiritual person. I wouldn't say I'm overtly religious. I understand religion. I understand the world religions. I understand the holy books and the not so holy books. And I began in the past 10 or 15 years studying more of the esoteric writings that pertain to what's going on today. Many people haven't studied those things. Just to give you an example, if you were to look at any of the Masonic writings, the writings of the Scottish Rite, for example, they talk about keeping the ultimate secrets from their own members. So you have to ask yourself, what kind of organization would this be for me to belong to if I'm never going to really discover the truth from the leadership? What is their ultimate motive? As you study all the secret societies, you find the same pattern there. And if you were to read something like the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, you will see the actual roadmap for what's going on. But they've also inserted this in various editions of the Bible. And people say, see, this is God here because it's coming to pass, just like it's written in the Bible. I did some genealogical work for the Observer on C.I. Schofield, and this guy was a criminal, number one. He was not the most likely man to be enlightened by God to come up with a study Bible. When I went into it deeper, I saw a pattern that the Rothschilds were actually the people that financed this new edition of the Bible because they wanted to get people herded into a certain kind of mindset, very much like what Tavistock does with their polling and their creation of false flag events that really impact people's consciousness on a subliminal level. So these are mind control mechanisms. And you can say, well, how can you say that about the Bible? That's God's word. God himself, if you could hear his voice, will tell you that that word has been basically bastardized, if I can use that word, that it's been manipulated and twisted to accomplish the ends that they write about in all their other works. It's there. The proof is there. And there is truth in the Bible or any of the other holy books, but one must use discernment because there are certain practices and certain customs and certain doctrines and dogma that are rammed down our throats that we're just supposed to accept without questioning them, such as the concept of the middleman. You know, the church's leader, the congregation's leader is somehow the middleman between us and our Creator. That's absurd. But this is what's put on us. Now, government does the same thing. Government controls religion. They control it also through education. And they control education through the secret societies and some of the higher institutions that they control financially. You know, it's no accident that all these experts from Harvard are always in our face, or the experts from MIT who are really sort of a pet project for the Pentagon. And I noticed I just used alliteration there. I wasn't trying to do that intentionally. But, you know, when you start digging down the rabbit hole, as you say, eventually the rabbits, they've been doing this for me for the past couple of weeks. The rabbits bring the stuff up for me. I don't even have to go down there anymore. They're so tired of seeing me down there, they just come up. And I offered to give them a break and just open it up with a backhoe. And just look at everything that's there. And the information is coming that quickly right now because of all the other things that are changing in the universe. We're facing really important times, and it's our responsibility to know who these people are who are running the show right now, because they have very evil intentions for our future. You know, it's not a lost cause, as I hear many people say, especially on the Patriot networks, but understanding who these people are and understanding the methods through which they rose to power reveals the truth. And then we have a better understanding of why they're doing what they're doing. In most cases, these are not actually Americans.
Well, how many of us would hire somebody without checking into their background and making sure that you could trust them with anything? And yet how little we really check into the backgrounds of those that, you know, are our leadership. And where they go after they've been in leadership, you'll find quite often that there's a whole other lifetime that they get into, and they don't leave the scene. They're very much involved quite often, and so it's real important that we're as scrutinizing of our elected officials as anything else. Because I just did an interview with Bev Harris this last week, and here we're hiring known criminals to design our voting machine software. And they've done it over and over again. I mean, this guy...
And they're from Israel on top of it. We have other countries counting our votes. What does that tell you?
Yeah, so then we're over there trying to oversee other countries' voting process. I think we need to come back here and start taking another look at this. And just the whole fact of utilizing computers in the process is another factor in itself.
Yes. Have you had the opportunity to read any of Hegel's writings? And you know, Hegel was a philosopher. And I should let you answer that question, I guess. I'm the host right now.
I'm aware of the Hegelian dialectic and that sort, but not
exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Well, this was a philosophical precept, okay, that he came up with. In other words, to just be very, very elementary in its principle, you can create a philosophy on the left, and you can create an opposing philosophy on the right, and you can present both of them and allow people the choice, but you present the two choices, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason for presenting that is they focus all their attention on arguing which is the valid one, when in reality they're using a secret one in the background without anyone noticing it. It's called Out of Sight, But In Your Face. And they do it with the movies. They do it with photographs. Barack Obama is a perfect example. They do it with fictitious documents. They do it with fraud. So what we're witnessing is the physical manifestation of that, which was promoted by Karl Marx. He created what you would call the physical manifestation of the Hegelian dialectic. Okay, he was a believer and a follower of Hegel's writings, and he thought, well, this is great as a philosophy. What if I turn this into materialism? Then I could, for instance, and I'm just giving you another elementary example, the way the dialectic works is the German army dresses up in British uniforms, and they attack Poland. And everyone assumes that Britain attacked Poland. Okay? Then they turn around and they put on the Polish uniforms and they attack Britain. And then Britain blames Poland for attacking them, when in reality, all the while, it was the Germans that did both attacks, you see?
Mm-hmm.
That's how the Hegelian dialectic works. Now, when we get into Barack Obama's case, that's what we're witnessing between Hawaii and Kenya. I can't stress this enough, that if the guy had a birth certificate, a genuine birth certificate, that couldn't be scrutinized by someone like me or Ron Polarek or any of the other researchers out there that know how to look at these documents and know how to look at photographs or reproductions and use a little bit of common sense. You read the instructions on the paper. If it says it's altered, it's not valid. So if the serial number's blacked out or redacted as the first certificate that Obama brought out, it's an invalid document. End of story. Okay? It's not a real birth certificate. So why does the White House promote this? Why do they slam the internet and then say, we posted it there so all these birthers could see the real document? Well, don't tell us in one breath that you can't rely on the internet. In the next breath, we should rely on what you put on the internet? You people are criminals. You're thieves. You're liars. And we have the proof. So these aren't false claims. We're telling the truth. So where's the logic in such statements? That's what the Hegelian dialectic does. Now, when I began writing about Obama, I put the pieces out. First, I put out the official story. That was part three. Part four was the real story. And I went on this basically it was like a mission it's like going on a field trip or an expedition. As time is moving along and I'm researching and I'm writing, every month I'm coming out with a new aspect of this story. And basically they were just helping me find everything because they were putting it all out there. The phony documents, the phony photographs. And I say they're phony. You can look at them and you say, oh, isn't he cute? That's when he was with his mother. But when you zoom in on the photo, you can see how the photo has been compiled. That if the documents are false, the story the pictures are trying to tell cannot be true. You understand the thinking. In other words, don't look at the Hegelian dialectic. Look outside of the Hegelian dialectic. Find how these things don't fit the Hegelian dialectic, and you'll begin to see that the Hawaii story is a fraud and the Kenyan story is a fraud. Now, how could I say that? Well, I don't know any black people from Africa that have purple lips. Certainly no African Americans, as they some people like to call them. Pastor James David Manning says there is no such thing as an African American. He's a black preacher, by the way, from Harlem. And he says, you're talking about Americans. You're American. You may be black, but you're American. You're not African. And so they're setting up the pretext for a race war by calling him African American or America's first black president, because he's not. The Hegelian dialectic shows me he's from Indonesia, and so does my follow-up research. Now, I seem to be jumping the gun here, but we can talk about any aspect of this you choose. Any question you want to ask me?
Well, there's so much information involved in what you've done in your research that I'm going to turn it over to you, because I wouldn't even know where to begin other than just ask you some questions involved with it. And one of the things that I mean, it isn't just you that's coming out with this kind of information. Now, I have heard, you know, that from some other sources, other questions that have been brought up. And as you get into this, I'll kind of bring it up when it, you know, it's apropos. But you're not, I mean, we should question everything and then look for the proof. And that, and what's wrong in that? And yet at the same time, quite often I get this argument that, you know, well, you know, what's so important about this birth certificate thing? Well, how many of us can go about doing anything in our life without proof?
Well, let's look at the Constitution. The Constitution demands that anyone who is not a natural born citizen, that means born on the continental United States, is not qualified to be the President of the United States and Commander in Chief of its armed forces. That's it.
Well,
okay. That's very important.
Well, it is important, but there is one other aspect that I've noticed in all of their speeches and anything that they say, there's a double meaning. And often I'm just wondering when they don't even consider the Constitution, even out of, you know, George Bush's comments, that they don't even consider it a working document, that somewhere along the line they don't feel that it is in effect anymore.
Well, if they were true Americans, they would be committing treason, wouldn't they?
Right, but if America's kind of in receivership, or, you know, whatever method or means that they, I mean, I'm going to be interviewing Ralph Epperson, and he claims that they negated the Constitution in their own words when they wrote it. So, and I'm not saying
absolutely. Yes. Ralph's been a guest on my radio show, and yes, they had secret agreements. They had the Virginia Company, and they had the New England Company, and this goes back all the way to King George. So basically, the United States was set up as what we now recognize as an implied, irrevocable charitable trust.
Interesting.
An implied, okay? It's not in stone. It's not written in stone, but these are secret agreements. And so irrevocable means it can't be taken back. And charitable means that they're giving this money out of charity. In other words, this is the highest good of moving money from one hand to the other across the ocean. And the trust cannot be dispersed. I mean, if you want to safeguard money you have, maybe something you inherit, you put it in a trust. So they set the country up like that from the beginning.
Okay, now I've not heard that before. So where did this information come from, or whose work, or is this yours, or what?
Well, a lot of it, some of it is my research. I went on my own research, but you can get into David Icke's research. You can get into Fritz Springmeier's research, G. Edward Griffin, and many, many other people that have written about this topic. There are people studying the laws actually to understand that when they tell us we're citizens, we are a part of that secret agreement, but we've never been taught that. About that secret agreement. I'll give you a basic fundamental example of who the players were when they set up these companies. You should ask yourself, who was the Virginia Company when they set this up? Okay? There were two individuals that were working on behalf of King George. One was the French paymaster, and his name was George Payseur. What's interesting is payseur is almost a pun or a play on words, because the French word for payer or paymaster is payeur. So George Payseur changed his name when he came to the United States to George Bayshore. He was given funding to purchase 600 acres of land. And then he and the other minion, who was also working for King George, he was the heir to the throne. His name was Louis, and he came over as Louis Payseur, middle name Cass, C-A-S-S. So Louis Cass Payseur became the head of the New England Company. We had 13 colonies, and the northern version was the New England Company. The southern version was the Virginia Company. Always attached to the British crown. Now, this doesn't mean the king or the queen. This means the office of the crown and its association with the city of London and the world control of finances through what we know is as maritime law or admiralty law. Now, when you're born as a citizen in the United States under the secret agreement, you move through the, first of all, the mother's water breaks. You move through the birth canal. You are delivered. You are given a certificate. These are things that happen, right? You get a birth certificate, just like a shipment that traveled across the ocean and arrives at a dock or a port and is unloaded. And there's a certificate describing who owns this and who it's going to. So in a sense, the state has a secret ownership of you from the time you're born. And it applies to maritime law. It's no accident that they use, that they call the room where the births take place, that they call them deliveries. It's no accident. Or that you're given a certificate. And that is basically has a financial value to them. In their system, they estimate that every person born is worth $1 million over a lifetime. And there are certainly exceptions to that rule. But that's the secret manipulation that's going on. That's how they control the population. Now, George Bayshore and Louis Cass Payser together worked on establishing the railroads across the nation. And they purchased mile after mile after mile of land, including 100 yards of land on each side of the tracks. So you see some houses when if you're on a passenger train going through a rural area, sometimes you come very close to a house. Actually, that house is encroaching upon that land. But it's understood that ultimately the Virginia Company owns that house. You don't really own it, even though you're paying for it. And we hear the same thing about cars. You're given a license. You're given a certificate of ownership. They call it a registration. And by these laws, they secretly imply that they own these things. But you're hoodwinked into believing that you make 60 payments over a 5-year period or 72 payments over a 6-year period with a hefty down payment. Money that comes out of thin air, and you have to work. You have to work. So it's your labor that is secretly contracted in this agreement. The money is worthless, especially today. They're giving us paper that they make out of thin air. And plenty of people have written about the Federal Reserve, but that's an important factor to consider when you're thinking about how it is that they own everything, because they know the money they're giving us isn't worth anything. What has value is the labor and whatever material things you're able to amass that they consider they own, even though you pay for them, even though you take them to your house or you give them to someone else. Ultimately, they think they own it. That's why they created the Uniform Commercial Code, the barcode that you see on all the products.
Which they want to do to us, too.
Yes. I mean, we've seen these things, but we don't understand what we're seeing. We think that this implies that somehow it tells what the product is and what the price is, that the cash register needs to know that. What happened to the days of the person stamping that little sticky thing on there that had a print, 59 cents or whatever? You're lucky if you can buy anything for $5 these days. That's worth owning, you know, that's worth having. So they set up these secret companies, and now they own all the shipping methods across the country on land. And they schedule the trains. They make the trains as large as they want. They move troops. They move minerals. They move military supplies. All the durable goods that are exchanged on the stock market belong to them secretly. You'd be amazed that the Northwestern Railroad in the United States, the Northern Pacific Railroad, is owned by a company in Ireland. You'd be amazed to know that. Or that big sections of Glacier National Park are owned by people from Germany and Holland and Liechtenstein and Switzerland.
Okay, so then these UN biospheres and whatever, are you saying that, are they selling off some of this land to other ownership. It isn't in a trust of sorts on its own right.
In some or most cases, that's been owned for several hundred years secretly.
Oh, okay.
We're told it's federal land, or this is a federal park or a state park. You know, the World Bank owns the Great Lakes. What does a bank need with the Great Lakes? I mean, what are they going to do? Do they own the fish? Do they own the people on the boats, the swimmers, the water, the underground bases? What is it they own?
So where do you find out the information on who owns some of these? Where would one start to look?
Well, it depends on what you're talking about.
Okay,
first of
like
all,
by finding out if the World Bank owns the Great Lakes.
Well, that was actually published in a newspaper several years ago.
Oh, okay.
I know it was in the Chicago Tribune and some other major newspapers. You know, this was revealed, and it was like, wow, you know, how can this occur? What is going on behind the scenes that this is allowed to happen? That the territorial United States is being sold to foreign entities. Well, it had been in the beginning. You know, the deal on the Virginia Company and the New England Company was 50% of all the money generated from the corporation of the United States, the secret corporation. We're not talking about the lowercase United States of America. We're talking about the capitalized version, like you see on all their legal documents. When you get your driver's license, it's all in capital letters because they consider you part of that agreement. 50% up front of the profits, and on the back end, 5% of a royalty on mineral rights, oil, copper, gold, silver, platinum, whatever minerals we have.
So in other words, you're saying if we're paying money to the feds, we're not really paying it to the feds. We're really paying it to another entity outside of this country.
Yeah, and of course that is what is known as the Illuminati. These rich bankers that have controlled everything through the British Crown and via the City of London,
and
which
city
is their secret financial district.
Is that kind of like a holding company?
Oh, it goes way beyond that.
Okay.
Way, way beyond that. Okay?
Yeah, well, I keep hearing this, hearing these statements that the Queen owns a lot of land here. But boy, when you start trying to dig in to find out the ownership on some of these places where you hear this, I'm kind of hitting a lot of dead ends, and that's why I was asking you earlier about, you know.
Yeah, you know, one way I determined that Germany, I mean, nowadays you can go look up titles if they're actually filed correctly, you know, but the way they've been getting away with all this corruption is they're doing this on computer screens. And people who are actually being foreclosed upon have a remedy in this system, because if they haven't been given this secret contract that transferred the ownership of the property from the company that financed their purchase to this foreign entity, the foreclosure's off. In fact, they can be sued for fraud. Everybody involved in it can be sued for fraud.
Yeah, but the real irony in it all is it's all fraud. I mean, when you're saying if this is a secret, you know.
That's right. You're getting the message. You get an A+, and I'll give you a gold star.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, you're catching the drift. Now, I'm not the only one that's bringing this information forward. And there are some experts. Lee Brobst is one person who can tell you specifically what the laws state. And there are various aspects under certain articles of the Constitution that deal with the person who's representing themselves, and not the name they give you, or not the citizen that they want to call you, but the free person as created by the Creator. Okay? This is your personality as God created you, not as they usurp your personal authority or your free will.
Okay,
That's been done secretly. The reason that they have to be secret is because if the people knew what they were doing, they would rise up against them immediately. Unfortunately, we've been propagandized and brainwashed into believing all this phony history, all the lies about science, all the lies about religion. Certainly, most people don't have a working knowledge of how the economic system works. You know, the Federal Reserve is a foreign entity. I proved in my writing in that Bush piece, I proved that these were all foreigners that were secreted into the country. They had no business being here. They didn't go through the proper channels of becoming naturalized citizens.
Well, and one of the aspects, now, have you had Freeman on your program at all?
No, I haven't. I've been on a show with him on Dr. Bill Deagle's three-hour special 2 weeks ago that we did on GCN, a panel.
Well, and when I was reading some of your information, you were getting into some lineage there on some of these people that were secreted into this country. And you got into this Egyptian thing, and when you're talking about these secret societies and their symbolisms, and one of the things that we've found, and some of us that in our research find out that, you know, everything, these societies, they like to do everything with ritual and dates and symbols and for whatever.
And numbers.
Right, right.
And you pointed out very succinctly and very intuitively the duplicity in the language. You see, there's the Hegelian dialectic and the double meaning of words.
Right, and that's, I mean, and that's even proven just when you look at a Black's dictionary, when people who are dealing in law have to keep buying newer versions,
mm-hmm.
or go back to the older versions.
Yeah, Melody, a couple of years ago, one of my listeners to my radio show called in and asked me to explain the Hegelian dialectic in terms of language. And this just came out of me. I hadn't even given that a thought. I had no idea what I was going to say. And I said, take the word apart. APART. The word apart means to be separated from or a distance from. Okay. So you're talking about two things that have been either, moved, at different points in space or different points in time or both. Now you take the word apart and break it into two syllables. It's and it's two complete words. The word a, which is an article, and the word part, which now means a member. Or so a part in that sense means belonging to. But when you put the two words or the two words together, they mean the opposite. Okay, and in fact, you're doing the opposite, and you're getting an opposite meaning by doing so. By joining the words together, you would think that it would be a unified concept, but it represents symbolically separation or division. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is.
and that just kind of came to me. It wasn't even a thought process. It was like that information just flowed through me. That's how intuition works. And recognizing that.
Let me stop here and give a station ID. You're listening to Truth Quest with Melody on KHEN LPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado, community supported radio. And we're streamed on the internet at khen.org. And if you'd like to listen to tonight's program or any past ones, they're archived at www.givemesometruth.info. And tonight our guest is Don Nikoloff, and he's giving us a sampling of some of his extensive research and then his intuitive ability to take all these facts and things and put them together and tell us about it.
Boy, does that take a lot of super glue, too, let me tell you. I'm their biggest customer.
So the most recent thing you're working on right now is on Hillary Clinton. Why did you save her for last?
I saved her for last because I sensed intuitively that she was going to rise again and somehow come to the forefront in this whole thing. And I was right about that that conclusion on the basis of her being selected Secretary of State. But I tell you, the real reason she's Secretary of State is it gives her diplomatic immunity to go around the world, travel around the world, and continue with her corrupt banking practices. Okay? And they're all doing it. Okay? W is doing it in Korea, in India, in Australia, in Ireland. The Clintons, Bill Clinton just went to Korea recently. Do you think it was really to rescue two journalists there? No, it was, it had to do with the fact that he wanted to get some money. And he had a hard time getting it. And I, from my understanding, he was unsuccessful in doing so.
Well, ultimately, what you're pointing out here is when you're talking about corruption, yet all these guys are corrupt, they're just working by two different sets of standards. And so what is deemed corrupt to us, to them, is doing business as usual. And
oh, yeah, they actually believe that they're doing the right thing. You see, they're pursuing the climax of total evil, okay, as their outcome. And that will make them gods. To be the dichotomy of the Creator is their ultimate goal.
And that's where and I think it would be great to see you do a program with Freeman if you were up to it, because he really put it, kind of opened my mind on the symbolism, and I'm sure you've probably addressed a lot of these issues too. And it's just kind of not, when you start seeing that, when you're walking out there in your capital city and everything you see out there in these major monuments and buildings all have a meaning and a symbolism that, you know, we just go from day to day and not think a whole lot of about, but they consider them not only as symbols but power sources, and in a sense, when you were talking about with the Bible being a what is the term you were calling it, it's like they were writing it to happen, to like they were having a play in a sense. And I'm not saying there's still a lot of questions I have on that, but there's a lot of things there that also tell me that, you know, that may not be so far off base if you have the same people in control of all the books in the libraries and have these agendas that they want to meet. So, if we can't trust them on some other things, why do we trust them on anything?
Well, yeah, it's a good question. Let me make a comment about the necessity for editions of the Bible. Bible scholars say, well, these editions have to account for the change in language and the change of the time. But see, that affords the opportunity to distort God's original message. Okay? In the Word. And it's written very cryptically. It's there for someone who is awakened spiritually. It's not to be taken literally. And yet, they've created it and made these feel good, warm and fuzzy stories, that you can teach children. Well, you're indoctrinating the children when you're not hearing the true word of God. God gives us free will. Do you think? And if you and I can agree on that up front, then my next question will make a lot of sense. I guess, do you agree that God created us and gave us free will?
I'm hoping so.
Well, I can tell you my experience has been that he has.
Okay. Well, I'm finding that I'm having to ask a lot of questions these days, because so many things that I automatically assume throughout life, I have to re-examine, and I'm not saying that I do believe, but I have to re-examine how that is, because of these, when you start studying the histories, I mean, when you look at the person that wrote the King James, I mean, that guy was not such a great character.
That's where I was going with this, but I wanted to preface that with the free will issue, because this is a free will universe. God would not, let's just think this through as a sort of a mind problem, okay? God would not give us free will and then punish us for using it. He also gave us 10 commandments. He didn't give us the 23 laws that we have in Washington, D.C., at the Capitol building there. He gave us 10 laws. And one of them is, thou shalt not commit murder. Okay? You're not to kill. Killing is against God's commandment. Okay, now a lot of people have a problem with that because it generates lots of money. Wars were created to generate money for those that conduct them, for those that script them out. You described it yourself. It's like acting out a play, and they get our people to give up their lives or put their lives at risk to accomplish that goal. And they fabricate a reason which is supposed to justify why we're at war. But in the context of not killing, war is wrong. So there must be an alternative solution. But we seem to be moving from the war to end all wars right back into another war. And this is always about acquiring the land where drugs are produced so that they can drug the populace, so that they can make huge amounts of money and fund all their secret projects. That's where illegal drugs come into play. This has been going on for centuries, for thousands of years. This is not a new thing. Now, King James, you rightfully pointed out, was a rather interesting character. He was a sodomist. He was a rapist. He was a murderer. And he twisted in his edition, the King James version of the Bible. I'm convinced that he twisted the language to excuse his own inadequacies. Somehow he was above the word of God. And he ordered his scribes to edit the Bible to allow for that possibility. That's a fact. I didn't do it. He did. And I question the intention behind that. Well, it's obvious. When you research the background of such individuals, you see that they themselves were exerting power over the other people, whereas they weren't chosen by God. Certainly not. God didn't choose them because they were going to sodomize children or rape women or murder people because they disagreed with his perverse ways. Certainly not. What kind of God is that? But here's the key. We all have individual responsibility, and we have collective responsibility in the eyes of the Creator. So these things that they're doing to us, folks, they're going to have to pay for at some time. If not while we are alive or while they are alive, they're going to have to definitely pay for it afterwards. And I can tell you that they will have their dichotomy. They will be gods in hell and eternal damnation. And that's not some extroverted religious belief that I have. I see the scientific evidence of it. I see the metaphysical evidence of it. And I see it unfolding right before our eyes. Question is, how many of us are really paying attention to what we're seeing, and how many are understanding what they're seeing and hearing?
Well, that again is being able to step back and look at the overall picture. And a lot of us are taught that, you know, you can't project, but that's exactly what these people do. That's all they do is sit around and project and then expect us to act within these their framework, and we need to step out and start looking at the bigger picture. I mean, the whole thing between corporations, and yet we have morals. And since when did corporations have morals? Unless the person running it had morals. Corporations don't have any feelings, and yet we allow that to exist around us and say, oh, that's okay, you know. Money, you know, that's okay if it's involved money. That's business. That's okay. Why?
Yeah. You know, you bring up a very good point, which allows us to go even in a more expansive kind of tangent. And it really encompasses everything that's going on. And that's, you know, mankind is alive to experience life. And you're given a series of opportunities or choices throughout your life. And it's always, are you going to make the choice that God would prefer you make based on his commandments, based on the natural laws of of the universe and how he created everything? Do you think God has a cash flow problem when he can create planets and stars and moons and galaxies and solar systems and the empty space in between? Do you think God has a cash flow problem?
No, and that brings up another point, because when you have people that can sit there and print money right and left and then try to say they own us by printing fake money, you know, that again is stepping back and looking at this overall illusion of how we have given over our power to people and organizations that you know, utilize money as a means to control us. And
yes. Yes. Yep. You answered the whole question in the nutshell, you see. So there are many religious organizations that operate on that basis. They call it tithing, okay? And I'm not saying tithing or charity is bad, but it's done of one's own free will, not as a condition of pre-acceptance into an organization. The organization has a motive. It becomes an entity in and of itself. And when its purpose is hidden from its members, it's likely to become very evil or even begin out of evil.
Well, even that goes, you know, without saying, your Patriot Act, your secret, your CIA and your various organizations like that, their FBI, that sort. Once you start going down that slippery slope, you find it's not long until you start seeing that those organizations now are being run in a fashion that many of us would object to.
Sure. And we could look at the media very briefly, and I'll show you some of the numerological symbolism in the names of the media. Okay?
Go ahead.
Let's name some of the major broadcasting networks that we had for most of our lives until we had cable and satellite TV. And those were ABC, NBC, and CBS, right?
Right.
The three majors. ABC, numerologically, is the series of numbers 1, 2, 3. Let's add 1 and 2 is 3, plus 3 is 6. Okay, so ABC represents the number 6. CBS, okay, C is a 3, B is a 2, so we have 5. And although S is the 19th letter of the alphabet, you add the 1 and the 9 and you get a 10, or a 1. So you have 5 plus 1 is a 6. NBC works out to a different number. It works out to a 2 or a 20. But if you look at who owns NBC, which is the company GEC, you remember watching NBC television when they brought the peacock out and they would play a chime sound? Actually, it was a celeste, I think, like a bass celeste, and it played GEC.
Uh-huh.
Okay, GEC, but they never announced GEC. They actually played the musical notes.
Huh.
Okay, now G is what letter of the alphabet? The 7th, right? E is the 5th. And let's make sure I'm doing my math right. Yes. 7, 5 is 12, and C is a 3. 12 and 3 is 15, 1 and 5 is 6. So you have the number 666 out of NBC, ABC, and CBS. Interesting, right? Let's look at CNN. CNN is a 3. The letter N is the 14th letter of the alphabet. I'll tell you that will break down to a 5 in each case. So you have a 3 plus a 5 plus a 5. 3 plus 5 is 8 plus 5 is 13. CNN is the Illuminati news. Okay? They control CNN. That's why you have CNN International. Okay? Now, let's look at Fox. F is the 6th letter of the alphabet. O is the 15th letter of the alphabet, 1 and 5 is a 6, and X is the 24th letter of the alphabet, that's a 6. Fox stands for 666. That's the Antichrist channel. Isn't that interesting? All of those, other than the 13 Illuminati number for CNN, all the other ones are sixes.
Huh. Now, but there's plenty of people stating that if you control the media, you control, you know, the people. And so who's controlling these entities outside of this that would, you know, want to have that symbology there?
Well, you have GEC, which is a government military industrial contractor. Okay, and they're big in the consumer market, light bulbs and all kinds of electrical products. But they do a lot of major work in the underground bases, and that includes technologies that they don't share with the public. Okay? ABC, for years, has been known to be affiliated with the CIA. Prior to them, probably more CBS, under the leadership of William Paley. He was involved in the Kennedy assassination on many levels. So they worked with the intelligence agencies. The intelligence agencies and these Illuminati banksters and these secret corporations and these secret societies all control the media from day one. It was created to control us. Mass control, mass mind control, mass propaganda. And we didn't really have TV in its more modern state until after World War II. So, in the early, or mid 1940s is when TV was coming out. It was actually initially invented by Nikola Tesla. It was one of the many, thefts of his inventions. Radio was another one. They gave that to Marconi, and eventually Tesla posthumously, got the patent for that, for wireless radio.
Have you ever heard the stories? Have you ever heard the story? Something about his father may have been had access to the Vatican libraries.
Oh, I wrote about that in my piece on Tesla, which is in that Scherf article.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. I read a lot of stuff, so I don't always remember where it came from. So.
Yeah, his father was in the ministry. And he had access to the Vatican as a young boy. They took Nicola there and actually allowed him to read a lot of these books. And he had a very good education. He was more inspired by the true, pure scientists of his time. But he took it to a totally different level. I mean, the guy was literally out of this world in everything he did. He was well over 100 years ahead of his time.
Does that also kind of bring up the fact that maybe there are a lot of the technologies that we're getting now are old technologies that have been around and that actually was in some of these books and libraries?
Well, some of the principles, let's say, that are foundational to those sciences were there. But Tesla was a very intuitive individual. When he couldn't solve a problem, he would go to sleep and wake up and just see everything working. Many times he didn't have to work out formulas to see these inventions. He would just visualize the concepts at work. And he was quite clever when he realized how much of his stuff was being stolen, that he could leave certain elements out that would certainly curtail somebody trying to reproduce this for evil purposes. He detested the fact that many of his inventions were militarized. And turned against the people. I mean, who do you, you know, what is war about? It's about killing innocent people. And they put these scripts out there because it gives them opportunity to sell oil, and refined oil and its different makeup and all the other products that they develop from it. It gives them now a means of getting rid of nuclear waste, which is why we have depleted uranium in so many of the munitions. And they don't care about destroying the planet.
I mean, even from like Doug Rocky stating it, well, it really does work well, too. I mean, because it does pierce a lot of things because of its hardness.
Yes. Right. And it goes into the atmosphere, and it has a half-life of 4.5 billion years. Think about that.
There's a lot of negative things to it, but from a military engineer standpoint, that, you know, they like the the aspect of several things along that line that we would find
to get
horrible.
Rid of the toxicity of aluminum manufacturing byproducts. What do? They put the fluorides in the drinking water. Isn't that wonderful?
Right.
And then they feed us the lie that it prevents tooth decay, when they know that it attacks the brain and the nervous system.
Because they put it in water back in Hitler's time for calming the people down.
Well,
correct?
They're still doing it today here in the
right.
United States. It's no different. They're putting more of it in the water and other substances. So, you know, I mean, this is pure insanity. You're talking about psychopaths.
So
there's nothing holy or sacred about this.
Okay, you got into a little bit on the Orly Tate's thing, and that has to do with the flu vaccines and that sort of thing, correct? Or is
let's for your listeners who've never heard of Dr. Orly Tate's. She's a dentist living in Mission Viejo, California. By her accent, I presume she's from the Ukraine. However, she may be from Russia, maybe of a Ukrainian background. Somewhere in the former Soviet Union is where she's from. She filed on behalf of Alan Keyes and Wiley S. Drake originally, and then adding names of so-called military officers to the lawsuit as a means of people who have standing against Barack Obama, because he would be the commander-in-chief ordering them to go to war and to put their lives at risk over lies, over the deception of who he is. And so they have standing and they can challenge this. But I became very suspicious of the fact that I had sent her four separate emails, originally three over half a year or a year's time, that she claimed she never got. And then I sent a fourth one after disclosing to her that I can prove without a doubt that the Dunhams were not related to Obama whatsoever, that I had done the genealogy on the family. They were CIA spies working hand in hand with some international intelligence agencies, likely the KGB, very possibly British MI6, and the Israeli Mossad, which is not impossible because these agencies working under a communist, fascist, Zionist regime will work together on that basis. They'll tell us that these are our enemies, and at the same time, behind the scenes, they're all involved in the drug corruption. They're all involved in the money laundering and the murder and whatever else you can think of. Okay, so secretly they work together. They're working for these 13 Illuminati families. Again, they're working for the City of London.
You know, one of the things that you brought up, I mean, when in your Scherf thing on George Bush and finding that they have a Nazi connection, and I had done an interview with Alex Constantine, and he was really putting them more into the fascistic, those that are in charge are more fascistic. But what I'm hearing now is a lot of people, and this isn't just now, this comes back from work from Bernadine Smith and even Charlotte Iserbay and that sort, bringing up the fact that, you know, we've had a socialistic group in here from the inside trying to work as well to take this country down. And so I'm beginning to wonder if this Hegelian dialectic is more of a fact that these guys really, you know, may have a separation and an agenda behind it, and maybe they are in charge. But then, you know, if they're both going for the same thing, what, you know, are they really that separate?
Okay, let's look at it from, that's a very good question and a very appropriate question. So I'll try to answer it as succinctly as possible. Let's look at the biggest picture. Good against evil. God the Creator, God the Father against Satan or pure evil. So you have good against evil. This is spiritual warfare. Okay? Now, how they manifest. If they're not doing godly acts, then we have to assume that they're on the side of evil, right? That they're following Satan. They're worshiping Satan. The skull and bones goes back to Greece, goes back to the year 322 BC. Okay. There's the symbology that you have in Yale Skull and Bones. So this is an ancient secret society in one respect, but you have these in other places. You have Freemasonry. You know, you have the Scottish Rite Freemasons. You have different aspects. You have the Prieur de Sion in France. And they're following the protocols of the Elders of Zion. This is the same type of literature that the Masons put out.
Yeah, but you also, you know, and again, there's a lot of people I know in my vicinity, particularly, that don't realize that there's that separation between the upper leadership and those in the general leadership that, again, they have that double meaning on what you're, you know, what's going on, and they don't realize that what they're doing has that double, I don't even know how
yes.
to say that one.
Well, those organizations depend on a hierarchy that produces results for on their behalf, you see? So the Blue Lodge people are the ones that are the most in the dark. And then after one starts gaining these different degrees, going up to 33, and some say they go up to 47, and I've heard even people say 63, okay, that on certain levels of secrecy, depending on how deep they are into Satanism, and witchcraft and all of this ancient alchemy
or mystery school.
Yeah, all of that, you know, they do this within their own organizations. This is passed on through their bloodlines and this is kept in within these bloodlines. So to quote Constantine's comment about fascism, well, let's look at a document that was discovered in 1950 in Madrid, Spain. It was called the Madrid Circular, and it made a proclamation that für uns der Krieg ist niemals vorbei. For us, the war is never over. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, that's a German statement. That's a German quotation. That has to do with the movement of the secret Abwehr, or the SS, the underground SS, which today is called the DVD, or the Dachau DVD, which stands for Deutsche Verteidigungsdienst. That is the underground intelligence agency. They moved that through Operation Paperclip to Oklahoma City. That was their primary ground or base of operation.
You know, I never heard
very close
the name
to Tinker
of that
Air
city.
Force Base.
I've never heard that stated before as to which city it went to.
Oh, yes. And now, their leader, Admiral Wilhelm Canaris, did not die. He was not hung in the nude at Flossenbürg, which history tells us, but he was secreted into Shawnee, Oklahoma, and he was a law professor up until around 1976 at Oklahoma Baptist University. What a great cover. Put the guy in a religious college and have him teach law. Okay? And this tied to the people in Barack Obama's alleged grandparent side of the on the maternal side of the family. Stanley Armour Dunham was a spy. He was known as Mr. Al from Chicago and Lebanon. He was not born in Kansas. He was not raised in Kansas. And in my Three Stooges Go to Washington article, I have a picture of him and his so-called alleged wife, Madeline Dunham, Madeline Lee Payne Dunham, sitting at a table with Dr. Charles Rashke, who was a food chemist for Wilson and Company out of New York, then out of Chicago, then out of Oklahoma City, and then Texas. They went to Texas, and eventually he took a job with Safeway Foods and moved to California. The Dunhams moved when they moved. They were spies. They were CIA spies, and we know Rashke was because I talked to his son. His son provided me with the photograph. His mother, Grace Rashke, told stories about his father's involvement in the CIA and even described situations when she was at Mount Holyoke College, when she had left New York to go to college there. And she was approached by the Rockefellers to give birth to several of their children. In other words, she was propositioned, we'll pay you a lot of money if you'll mother a child with one of our sons. And she turned that down, but said that her roommate accepted and became very wealthy as a result. So these people work their bloodline into society at a moment's notice. They've done this for 150 years. This is why the Rockefeller's influence is like it is. And we know that about Bill Clinton, that there's a Rockefeller connection there, that the story about his father was another fabrication. And when you look at Hillary Clinton and when you hear what I have to say about that, it's going to blow your mind.
Okay. I can't imagine.
Okay. So I'm sort of painting this picture. Now, these are how these spy networks worked when they secreted not just scientists, which is what they told us Operation Paperclip was about, but many, many more spies. Many more spies. And basically, as I was doing the Barack Obama genealogy, I'm discovering, wow, these are the major players in Operation Paperclip here. And they set up the Bank of Hawaii for that purpose. And that's where the Dunham name was found. That's where the Dunham name came from. They used the name of James S. Dunham, who was a Great Lakes, there's that Great Lakes again, ship captain, who was instrumental in getting the port of Chicago, or the harbor, dug deeper so they could bring in bigger ships. And I suspect that they were transporting arms from Tinker Air Force Base in Oklahoma City north to Chicago, and then across the Great Lakes, and then over the Atlantic Ocean. And they could do that very easily. Guess where from? From Walker's Point, Kennebunkport, Maine, which is known as the Bush Compound today.
Right.
See, the Bushes were really the sheriffs. We must remember that. And it so happens that the man that worked for Tesla was George H. Scherf. Here you have George H. W. Scherf.
So, where
big
was
coincidence,
it,
isn't it?
Yeah, and so where would this tie in with the fascist and the socialist aspect in?
Well, okay. Now, after this, let's go back to this Madrid Circular. I went sort of how they moved the people around. Now let's come back to that. In 1953, T.H. Teetons wrote a book called "Germany Plots with the Kremlin." And basically, he disclosed this plan that we're seeing right now. We're seeing Germany, the ancient secret intelligence agencies of Germany, the KGB and the GRU, which is above the KGB. We're seeing them carry out this plan that was in the Madrid Circular. Interesting. The Madrid Circular came out in 1950, and I discovered the spy names of the Dunhams in a document that is alleged to have been created in 1950. It's on the internet, and I found the serial number to that document, or the number, the symbol that led me to that number was on a pornography picture of the character they're calling Stanley Ann Dunham. It was sort of soft porn that was probably taken somewhere here in the United States at Christmas time. And on one of the pictures was a number, YA-438. And I researched that on the internet, and I kept coming up with things like car tires, truck tires, spare parts for motor vehicles, computer accessories, video games. And I went back to it more recently, when I was working on part 7 of the Three Stooges Go to Washington. And this was basically my summation on who Barack Obama really was. And I totally exposed them as the Maduna family, supposedly from Yugoslavia. When I entered Yugoslavia-438, that document popped up. And the name Sophia. Here we have Stanley Ann, Sophia Maduna, very much like sounding like Dunham, right? Then we have Madeline Dunham's name on this list was Magdalena Maduna, also alleged to be from Yugoslavia. Then a Friedrich Maduna, which was supposed to be Stanley Armour Dunham, the grandfather of Barack Obama, or the father of Stanley Ann Dunham, and he's alleged to be from Yugoslavia. Now, the pretext of this record was a list of passengers who were rescued from the Bologna prison camp in Italy. There is no such place. Okay? They misnamed it after a town in Italy. And this is a town somewhat on the Adriatic side of Italy, moving down near the Bari region, south of Venice, south of Rimini, in that area. This is farmland. Now, they're alleging that in 1950, they rescued a boatload of people from this fictitious concentration camp. And where did they send them? Did they let them go back to Hungary and Poland and Germany and Switzerland, France, Austria, Yugoslavia? No, they shipped them all to Australia. Where's the logic in that? And I found that the list was actually a list of spies. They had shipped a boatload of people, and the pretext was that they were refugees who had been rescued from a concentration camp. Wouldn't you want to go back to your home after having spent several years in a concentration camp? It didn't make any sense, but it fit. It fit perfectly with Germany plots with the Kremlin, and it fit perfectly with the Madrid Circular. So this is a communist fascist takeover. Now, this is religiously exemplified in British Israelism. It's a form of communism.
Right.
So that's what we have. We have it in religion. We have it in these two antagonists, although, you know, historically Russia was played as or portrayed as a protagonist in World War II. No, they got rid of Hitler. Hitler escaped. He didn't commit suicide. And they know darn well that what they told us was a lie, that the dental records didn't match, and the Russians discovered this. They secreted him to Argentina, and he stayed up in the mountains near a ski resort, and he spent 30 years at Lake McDonald Lodge in the Glacier National Park.
In the Glacier?
This is mind-blowing stuff. Mengele is still alive today.
He is?
Living in the United States.
Well, I knew he'd come over here, or that's my understanding, but I had no idea he was still alive.
Well, many of the mind control programmed victims describe, especially the women, describe having met him as Dr. Green or Dr. Greenberg. Uh-huh. And they met Hitler too. He was doing the programming too. This is a big stretch for a lot of people, but you know, I've never proclaimed that I want anyone to believe this stuff. And certainly your disclaimer a while back covers this, but the proof is there. There was a man that died at age 114, and that would have been Hitler, in Seat Pleasant, Maryland. It was the fourth time a man by the name of William Coates died in Maryland. Very interesting. And he had 37 grandchildren, and I forget how many great-grandchildren he had. But the evidence is there that he could have produced such a line of descendants through just the activities he was involved in. And they were very tight-lipped about who this man was. And as soon as this started hitting the news, they got a gerontology expert from UCLA, who the guy's name escapes me right now. I'm sorry, I don't have this in writing before me, any of this stuff. But he arose to say, well, there's no documentation. This man could only be 92 years old at the most. How does one arrive at such a conclusion? It was just more propaganda, more disinformation, because they knew some of us were on Hitler's tail. And I can tell you, he died in the Clinton, Maryland nursing home. That's where he died.
Well,
in
know,
2004, 5 years after Otto Skorzeny died in Boca Raton, Florida.
You know, and I know one of the first things you get from, and because I've had it happen to me many times about how people saying, you know, this isn't plausible, this isn't, can't be true, and whatever. And yet, when you start checking these facts, and it isn't just this kind of fact, if you start checking statistics, and I did an interview with Dr. Tim Ball, and they cheat on those. I mean, we have to realize that, I mean, if we're going to check these things, we have to either do it on our own or start realizing that, you know, there's what we think is the truth may not
yes.
be.
Yes, I agree with you. You know, it's like throwing breadcrumbs out, okay, and so that you can retrace your steps. And they think because the breadcrumbs may have fallen into the, worked their way into the soil, you know, into the topsoil and the overgrowth and the, this cycle of death and rebirth that occurs in nature, that somehow these facts, once they obscure them, they can't be retrieved. But the truth is always there. It can always be uncovered, you see. And that, this is why I named my radio show Evident Footprints.
Yeah,
because they do leave footprints.
Go ahead and give that in your websites too.
Well, I wasn't intending to go into a promotion of my show.
No, that's fine.
That,
I do that with everybody, so.
Yeah. Well, my website is directlightproductions.com. You put that in a URL address bar, just directlightproductions with an S .com. And you can read about this research on articles. Some of it is in news. Some of it is in documents. And I should come back quickly to the Orly Tates thing in a moment, too, because we, again, went off on a tangent. But let me also let the people know that my radio show airs Monday through Friday on bbsradio.com. You go to www.bbsradio.com, or you can just put in the name of the show, evidentfootprints.com. It'll take you to the same place. It airs at 10 p.m. Pacific, 1 a.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday.
And now, you're on a lot of radio programs, too. You're a busy person.
I am. I'm on RBN, GCN, America's Voice from time to time. I'm on the Blog Talk Radio Network, Wind Talkers Radio Network. Lots of shows. I'm getting a lot of recognition, which is to me positive because that means the truth and the message are getting out.
One thing quickly before you get into the Orly Tates thing, I just wanted, you were bringing out the skull and bones thing, and that symbology right there is so in our faces that when you have a group there that's, you know, this is a school they're putting them out of, we're schooling pirates. And it's about when what we see going on in our economy, our economy and in the world is it's a thing about property. Somebody's in here that they're after property using phony instruments as money.
Yeah, well, Skull and Bones is a death cult, and they use the skull and crossbones as a symbol on most pharmaceutical packaging. When it's poisonous in nature or toxic in nature, don't they?
Right.
It's no accident that occurs.
Right. Okay.
It's part of this ritual.
Okay, now go back to Orly Tates quickly here because you'll probably...
Okay. I can wrap this up pretty shortly. Well,
okay.
Having an interest in who she was working for, because I've determined that this Hawaii-Kenyan argument is a dialectical argument, and I sent her the photos proving that this is a fraud. So therefore, she should focus on where he's really from, okay? That he's not from Hawaii. He's not from Kenya. Quit producing bogus documents as representations of a vehicle to get into the heart of the matter. They're fraudulent, and it's a requirement. It's a constitutional requirement that he produce this proof. And we have this across the board about this character. So I became rather suspicious. Who is Orly Tates working for? Is she working for Obama to perpetuate this, or is it for the Rockefellers or the Rothschilds or all of them? And I think it's all the above, but I would have to say Israeli intelligence has something to do with that too. Now, it's a coincidence that her husband, Yosef Tates, who lives in Mission Viejo like her, has been working for at least the past 9 years, hand in hand with his company, Daylight Chemical Information Systems, Inc., which is actually in Mission Viejo, Santa Fe, New Mexico, Shanghai, China, and Cambridge, England. This company manufactures a software called Descartes that analyzes all the complex computations and potential possibilities of creating chemicals or viruses or vaccinations, any of these things. Been working with hand in hand with Novartis, the patent holder of the bird flu vaccine, for 9 years. Is that a coincidence?
Seems like there's some patents held on some of the other vaccines too. I mean, not just vaccines, on the
virus too.
Right, yeah, that's but, what I was going
to
say.
No, I'm saying, is it a coincidence that her husband, she's filing this suit against Obama on someone's behalf, and we know some of these people are fictitious people. You don't call somebody a military officer Lita M. Lott. That's not a proper designation of someone in the military. And there's no branch of the military named, just military officer. It's totally inappropriate for anyone in the military. Or to call someone Dr. Captain something or other. She makes glaring mistakes like that, which lead one to believe that these people are not even real people. Now, they show up as agents on the money laundering databases, I can tell you that, many places, where they're operating as intel people, and those are their assignments. There are a multiplicity of possibilities in how those names are used. What's interesting is the guy that's brought forth this new document, Lucas Daniel Smith. Now, he claims he's from Des Moines, Iowa, or Cedar Rapids, Iowa, so somewhere in that. Iowa, it doesn't matter. He shows up five times in the database. There's either this guy showing up five times as the same person, or there's five different Lucas Daniel Smiths. You get my meaning.
Uh-huh.
Now you put that name in whitepages.com and hundreds of them come up. Why is it that those people aren't registered in these databases? Likely they're not real people. Or it's not a real person. But what I find interesting is the first letter of, or the initials of his name, spell out LDS, Latter-day Saints. And they are the genealogy people, and they're the people managing a lot of these databases. So there's a connection. There's a connect-the-dot fact right there. Now, I find it extremely troubling that the woman who's representing all of these litigants in these lawsuits, we're talking about on the plaintiff side, to get Obama to produce his documentation, don't have genuine documentation, and in many cases, from what we can tell, these are fabricated people. These are made like Federal Reserve notes. Give them names. They say they're from a certain place. Yeah, this guy's willing to go to jail for committing perjury, pulling the ruse of the millennium on the rest of humanity. Well, it's not even a real person from what I can tell. Well, so Orly Tate is directly related to this bird flu pandemic via her husband.
Well,
in and of itself is a bombshell.
Right, and a lot of these suits, it seems to me like if you can get these lawsuits going, then it gets people's mind off, oh, well, everything's being taken care of. And so they just sit on it and they end up being gatekeeping mechanisms.
Yes. Now, it's the same thing with Jane Burgermeister, this Irish-Austrian woman who's living in Vienna. But when we trace the phone number goes to Vienna, and it's rerouted to New York or Chicago or Denver, Colorado, different cities around the country. It moves around. How can this be when the woman claims she's in Austria? How can she take the work and the research of Dr. H. Ruat, Dr. Bill Deagle, Dr. Arthur Evangelista, Andrew S. Jones from the National Institute of Health, and claim it as her own, and then turn on these people like a venomous snake, or anyone who's contributed money to her under fraudulent circumstances. And the so-called lawsuit filed in New Jersey by a Tim Vauder is directly linked to a Martin Moorhead who works for Affymetrics Inc. in Santa Clara, California. This is another find, like the Tate's find. This was my discovery. This individual works for the genome manufacturing company. They make the chips. The genome mapping chips. Is that an accident that these people are associated with each other?
I guess when they all work together, they get connected together one way or the other.
Yes. So that's the point. That's the point. This is the Hegelian dialectic. You see it in action now, but I've picked it apart. I've torn it to shreds. This is the message that's got to go out, Melody. That's the underlying theme to this whole thing. This is what's called the truth. And they're shaking in their boots because it's coming out.
Well, and you know, I really appreciate you coming forward and bringing all your investigation forward. And again, you can find this on his Direct Light.
DirectLightProductions.com.
Okay, and then on you also have your other website I don't have it in front of me.
That's www.bbsradio.com. Station 1, Monday through Friday, 10 p.m. Pacific time, 1 a.m. Eastern.
And your program is called?
Evident Footprints.
Evident Footprints. And, you know, I really, again, want to thank you for coming on and giving time, because I know you've got a program coming up here pretty quick.
In a few minutes. And I want to thank you for allowing me this great opportunity to speak to your listeners and to you. And let's not be such strangers. I know I have been very busy. I think you can tell I have been.
Oh, yes.
And we've only scratched the surface. Let me say that. I want to encourage people, if you read anything that I've written, read The Three Stooges Go to Washington. Start with part one and work your way through. It's compelling information. It really is. And it's the truth.
And again, I want to thank you. And I'll go ahead and we'll play something here and then we'll get back to some PSAs. So thanks again, Don.
Okay. And say hi to my friend Katie, if you would, too.
I certainly will, because she, I think she was having to put her cat down and she was unable to, I mean, it was kind of a trying thing for her today, so I know.
Oh, that's a horrible experience. You know, my thoughts and prayers go out. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask your listeners quickly to remember to say a prayer for Don Harkins at the Audio Observer, too.
Okay, yes,
and
please.
Thank you, Melody. We'll do this again.
Okay, thank you.
And all right, you take care.
Bye. Okay, this is KHEN LPFM Radio 106.9 Salida, Colorado, and